Good morning. How are you? So as Sue mentioned earlier, I have an ordination in a Rinzai Zen lineage. And some time ago, I was challenged by somebody to do a service that wasn't Zen or wasn't Buddhist. So if you see me on Thursday nights, I would normally wear this necktie and be wearing that Zen costume. But this morning, I'm wearing this necktie and the costume of a Eurocentric postmodernist. And I had to hide the Zen references inside the other stuff. So if anybody can catch them, come see me in the social hall. I'll buy you a free coffee after the service. So back in the good old days, life was short. People didn't live very long, and it was difficult. One could say those early ancestors, our hunter-gatherers, they lived pretty close to the land, struggling to stay warm, trying hard to peer into the darkness to see where the dangerous, scary stuff was lurking, working hard to get enough to eat. You know, chasing down wild animals with pointy sticks was hard work. The days were good, the nights not so much. Nights were where the dangerous stuff was. And when the sun shone, plants grew, people stayed warm, the food animals showed up, and when the sun set, things changed a bit. At night, it was a lot more difficult and a lot more dangerous. And that source of light that they depended on is actually hydrogen fusion, right? Albert Einstein. Now, they didn't quite understand that, those folks on the African plains. All they understood was that death comes quickly without sunlight. And interestingly, in time, some of those folks learned how to store hydrogen fusion energy. Can you believe it? And they didn't actually do it the way Jerry's doing it with PV panels and maybe batteries. They used plows, and they stored sunlight in the form of grain and nuts and seeds and dried meat and firewood. And they managed to stretch the daylight hours into the times that weren't quite so well lit. The better they became at being farmers, the longer we tended to live. And in spite of that advancing technology and our ever-increasing skill in being solar harvesters, at times truly terrifying things would happen if the sun didn't shine because of a cloudy snap or unusually cold weather, or sometimes even worse. So I want to give you the 60-day forecast right now so you can make plans, because shortly before noon on August 21st, the great dragon is going to appear without warning and will once again consume the sun. Can you imagine how terrifying that would have been to not understand what was happening and to all of a sudden see the giver of all life and light slowly consumed, slowly extinguished before your eyes? And you thought a burned out light bulb in the basement stairwell was bad. Right. Now, your mileage may vary. You may want to try this for yourself. I'm not completely sure, but it seems to be well proven that banging on pots and pans will not change the length of a solar eclipse. The dragon will eventually become frightened, will eventually spit out the sun, and the dangerous, scary time will pass. But it seems as though people of old still wanted to influence these huge forces which held their lives in sway. And maybe banging on pots and pans didn't work. Perhaps something else might work better. And so I think people hunted around and looked for ways to try to influence these foundational factors concerning and affecting their lives. The sun, in time, became a central symbol for many early religions because of its huge significance as a provider of light and sustenance in all its forms. Being prone to ritual, ceremony, humans adopted the sun and smaller versions of the sun as an almost universal symbol of life. Christianity refers to the Jewish Midrash of Genesis, the first book of the Christian Old Testament, wherein the primary utterance of the creation of the entire universe, who remembers it? Let there be light. That's exactly right. Judaism cherishes the Ner Tamid, the temple flame, which miraculously burned for 7 days, even though there was only oil for one day. This has been memorialized in the form of the menorah, which shines brightly in many households during the Festival of Lights, also called the Hanukkah. Catholics keep a chancel candle lit in the sanctuary to show that the Lord is ever present. Hindus have a goddess named Lakshmi, the goddess of light, the symbol of supreme blessing, bliss, and divine power. The Egyptians and Aztecs, in Africa and India and China, everywhere you turn, sun and light are foundational symbols in ritual and religion. Japan even went so far as to name itself the land of the rising sun. Now, lest we be excluded, Europeans were also sun worshippers. The Celtic reverence for light predates Christianity by some 300 to 400 years. When the new kids on the block, the Christians, arrived, they aligned their celebrations of Jesus' birth with the existing Celtic and Roman festivals of light already taking place at that time of the year. A small, distant remnant of those old festivities still remains today in the form of the Yule log and those little teeny lights on the evergreen tree at Christmas time. Were this a Scandinavian congregation today, we would have probably been out this weekend celebrating the longest day of the year with huge bonfires, preferably on mountaintops if we had one handy. And in some cases, some locations, people still practice the even older, ancient ritual of making large spoked hoops of straw and rolling them down mountainside meadows after they're lit. And it's still done today. So, speaking of crosses, there's another symbol of the sun that's not quite as cheery, but yet I still want to mention that awful Nazi symbol, the swastika. It is also, in fact, a sun sign. What Hitler took for his own in the 1920s actually predates him by some 4,000 years. The cross with bent arms first appearing in the Indus Valley civilization as a sun symbol used for religious worship. It continued to be a common symbol of life and light in old Hindu and Buddhist art. And today, this Nazi spinning wheel is still a frightening symbol of the dark times when racism, tyranny, and fascism were running amok, and many, many good people lost their lives. We UUs have a connection with light and our very own small sun, our flaming chalice. So for just a minute, I want to continue with the World War II history lesson. Back in the 1920s, there was this guy, Hans Deutsch. He was a politically active Austrian artist. And he got himself into trouble because of cartoons he'd drawn, which were critical of the Nazis. And so he was forced to leave. And he migrated through Germany and through France and eventually ended up in Portugal, where he bumped into a guy named Reverend Charles Joy, who was in charge of a small group of activists who were busy providing aid and covert transport out to the West for the Eastern European refugees escaping the spreading Nazi threat. This group, this young startup group, the Unitarian Service Committee, they had a small problem. So as the UUA website describes it, the Unitarian Service Committee ran a cloak and dagger group of agents and couriers, disguises, signs, countersigns, midnight runs across the guarded borders. They were the means of freedom back in those days. And when a document may keep a man or woman out of jail, give them standing with governments and police, it's important that it looks important. Hunts was asked by Reverend Joy to create a symbol for the Unitarian Service Committee to use on official paperwork to make them look official, to give dignity and importance to them, and at the same time to symbolize the spirit of the work that was being done. The result of that meeting was a simple sketch of a flame hovering over a chalice. So was this flame the holy oil lamp burning in the Jewish temple? Or was it the light of reason, which the Greeks so revered? Perhaps it was a beacon of freedom and hope, which the Allied forces fighting Hitler were offering. Well, in his own words, Hans Deutsch described the flaming chalice as a symbol of faith in action, sacrifice, self-denial, and a readiness to serve. What sprang forth from his pen that day was adopted as not just the official seal of the Unitarian Service Committee, but has now become the global symbol of Unitarian Universalism and is immortalized in every UU congregation every time we light the chalice. These symbols of the sun and of light and of life are inextricably intertwined in our actions and in our language. They are symbols of the good and the beautiful and of all that is positive in the world. Born in the darkness of World War II, this mini sun, this is the fire of change, and the light that it gives off is the light of faith in action, in service to social justice for all. This flaming chalice remains a symbol of desire for action. Action to bring positive change to a world that seems forever to be slipping into the darkness. So my wish for you is that this flame kindle in you your faith in the essential goodness of humanity. To quote a poem that Max Ehrmann wrote, with all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. So put a candle in the window and keep the flame of hope burning bright in your hearts. Never forget the invincible power of your true, compassionate heart. And in the ancient Pali language, Atadipa, you are this light. So be it.